Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey. Well, here we are with another episode of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. This is, as you know, a ministry of the North American Mission Board, and it is our way of connecting with folks who are in the trenches seeking to do what they believe God has led them to do and revitalize and replant churches. And we want to be a wealth of information to you and share some sources and resources with you, and that's part of the process of this podcast. My name is Dan Hurst, and I just basically sit here and watch guys talk. And and I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good job if you can find it, you know.
And so, Mark, yes. Clifton, we have a guest who's been with us, and
he's the guest that won't leave.
Well, it's because you can't get up off of that couch. That's the problem.
He's not going anywhere.
It's just Mark Halleck is our he's our sidekick, always guest. Now we're going to have Mark with us a lot. Always, when we can't find a real good guest, we always have Mark.
Thanks.
Yeah, Mark is the pastor of the Calvary Church in Englewood, Colorado. Replant, been going for 14 years, has multiple church plants, multiple replants they've sent people out to. Great, great place. And we're glad, Dan, you and I are to be here along with Kyle, our producer. We're here in Denver doing these podcasts live in the sub-basement of the bomb shelter, if you will, of the of Mark's church, the Calvary Church in England. Oh, we got a great topic today, right?
Yeah, we have a great topic.
All right, let the people know what the topic is today.
Four symptoms of a declining church.
All right, four. Now there are really
at least a dozen.
There's at least a dozen, and you know what? This podcast, unless Jesus returns. By the way, we do these ahead of time, right? So we do these several weeks. These are not live right now, you know. I know we sound like we're live. Yeah. But I've often wondered if the rapture comes, will these podcasts still go on?
I don't know, Kyle.
Kyle, will you be here to lead them? I don't know. Anyway.
He's the producer.
It's I don't know. Him. If he's still here, he'll probably go ahead and put them on. But anyway, as we're doing this, as God allows, we want to be doing this podcast for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And you can have a part in that by hitting the subscribe button
there you,
right
oh
now.
Oh boy, was that smooth or what?
That's the best segue yet.
We need you to hit the subscribe button, please.
Yeah, hit the subscribe button. It doesn't cost you a thing. It doesn't hurt. And it's just a way of connecting with us. And then you'll hear about other podcasts that are coming up.
It's because even though there are four symptoms of decline we're going to talk about today, there are actually 12 or 16.
That's right.
And over the next year, we'll visit all of them. So that's why you want to subscribe. But today, we're going to talk, and these aren't in any particular order. These aren't necessarily the most important or the least important. These are just four that we decided to talk about
today. That's right.
Because it's our podcast, and we can do what we want.
Let's start with a huge mistake that churches that are declining make, and that is they make decisions to keep the people they have.
Yeah, they make decisions based on keeping the folks they have. And you say, well, wouldn't you want to make a decision based on keeping people? You don't want to run people off. Well, let me think on that for a minute. Okay. Well,
and actually, you may have already done that.
You may have already done it. What we're talking about here is if your decisions are based on making sure nobody leaves, everybody's happy, then you've given up leadership to whoever threatens to leave the church.
That's right.
You can't do that, Pastor, or we'll leave. Oh, we can't do that, Mark, because if we do, they're going to leave. Well, then you don't lead the church anymore.
That's right.
Talk about that a minute.
Yeah. Well, it's right. It's like and here's one of the things I'd say in revitalization. If you lead in that way, well, first of all, it's not leadership.
You're leading out of fear.
You're leading out of fear and not faith. And the last thing a declining and dying church needs is a pastor who leads by fear.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, again, we've talked a lot about this. We want to love God's people really well. We want to care for them. We want to build trust. At the same time, it takes courage.
Yes.
It takes faith.
Yes. You know, our friend Brian Croft says, now this is what Brian Croft says, so you can.
Hey, listen, if Brian said it, I'm in.
Our friend Brian Croft says, he's, by the way, at Southern Seminary, Mathena Center, also Practical Shepherding. Check him out at Practical Shepherding. But listen. He says, unless you're willing to get fired, you're not willing to be the pastor.
Oh, man. Okay, say that again.
Unless you're willing to be fired, you're really not willing to be the pastor. Now, you know, that's not a license to be a knucklehead.
Right.
All right? It's not a license to be a jerk.
Yep.
But it is saying, unless there are some things that are worth your job, you've got to draw the line. And I think in a dying and declining church, when it's like the locker room of a losing team, everybody's unhappy, everybody's complaining, and if you listen to all of that and you make decisions trying to keep people happy rather than doing what God wants you to do with His church, because they will never be happy seeking their own way.
That's right.
They'll never be happy trying to fulfill their own needs. They're only going to truly be happy when they join Jesus in His work. And you have to lead them into that happiness.
That's good. Well, you know what I think about is Dr. Al Mohler wrote a book years ago called The Conviction to Lead. And convictional leadership is desperately needed in the church today. And it's needed in declining churches in particular. There has to be, we need pastors who have deep conviction and to lead, not being a jerk,
right,
but to lead from a place of I have to be faithful to the Lord and His word,
right,
above all else.
Right.
And that leads me to love His people and to care for and shepherd His people. It also leads me to say, listen, there are people going to hell all around this church, period. Are we willing to do what it takes to reach them with the gospel that has saved us?
Yep.
And that good news, or not?
Well,
that's the question.
Early on, one of the churches I was seeking to replant, we had very few people. We had one family come, and they had a couple of kids, teenagers, and they were like, you know, we've got to start a youth group on Wednesday nights for these kids. I can't do that. I got a full-time job. We're barely figuring out what we're doing right now. Well, if we don't do it, this family's going to leave. Well, they're already Christians, right? There's plenty of churches they could go to that have a youth group. And right. I can't do something to keep people from leaving. If they want to join us on the mission God has called us to. Mm. Because let me tell you what, our youth group was not going to be in the basement of the church on Wednesday night. The youth group for our church was the school two blocks down the road that was the most troubled high school in Kansas City.
That's exactly right.
That was our youth
yes.
ministry.
Yes.
If you want to join us in that youth ministry, bring those two boys on and we'll be part of that youth ministry.
Love it.
But if you're asking us to start a youth program for your two boys, or you're going to go somewhere else, well, God love you, go somewhere else.
That's right. Exactly.
Which brings us to the second point, which I think is so important, and that is where we numb the pain of decline with an overabundance of activities. Mm. You know, we give them so much stuff.
Well, we need to say that I want to say we anesthetize the pain of decline, but these two guys out.
Well, you couldn't can blame spell me. It. That's I was just, trying
I can't
to spell
even
it
spell
out here.
It. I can't spell numb. Isn't that A-N-A-M-B? No, that's NAM.
You're
sorry.
Close.
NAM, numb, whatever. But we numb the pain of decline with an overabundance of activity and maintaining with great passion programs and things that no longer work. In other words, Mark, you and I have been in church planting, and I've planted a number of churches. You've planted a number of churches. Most church plants don't have unnecessary activities. They
That's
have,
right.
They have worship.
Yes.
They have small groups. They have discipleship. They have ministry. Many dying churches will have Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, mission, all kinds of committee meetings, deacons meetings, church council meetings, even the, I love the committee on committees. That's the committee that nominates committees.
You bet. You
that's
bet.
Like the robots that make robots. That's what that, I have no idea what that means. But nonetheless, you'll find dying churches that refuse to quit doing things that aren't making any difference, but they're keeping people busy.
That's right.
Because that busyness makes them think they're not dying because we're actually doing something. And you are dying. And all of this busyness just numbs it. I remember I was leading a church in a transitional interim, and they'd have 30 on Sunday mornings, used to have 400. They had 30 on Sunday mornings, might have 10 or 12 on Sunday nights, but they still wanted to meet on Sunday nights, right? Yeah. So those 10 or 12 would come on Sunday nights, we would sing hymns, and I would preach. And one Sunday night in the fall, one of the dear old ladies, when we were about done after service, she raised her hand and she said, I'd like to say something. Sure, so she stood up. She said, all of us here are elderly. None of us need to be driving after dark. It's getting dark earlier. I suggest we just don't have Sunday evening services until springtime. She no sooner got that word out than one of the two deacons remaining stood up and said, well, you can stay home if you want to, but the rest of us are coming out.
Unbelievable.
That's what I mean.
Just maintaining
with great, they weren't reaching any lost people.
Right.
It wasn't, but it was something we'd always been doing. And if we quit doing it, we must be dying. Well, you're dying anyway.
Yeah.
And dying churches, well, sometimes they'll print newsletters. Sometimes they'll have a part-time secretary. I don't know what they do. I guess they answer the phone and look at the mail and print the newsletter.
All those phone calls coming in.
All those phone calls coming in, you know. I don't mean to pick on part-time secretaries, but I've been to a lot of dying churches that the only staff they have is a part-time secretary.
And
why not get someone to work with community or whatever? Yeah. Mm-hmm. My point is we just keep doing the same things we're doing, and that numbs our decline. So I'm sure you've experienced that, and I'm sure some churches that are listening know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, it leads us to the third step that we want to talk about, the symptom of a declining church, and that is that we value the process of decision more than the outcome of the decision.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, man, that's how we do it.
It doesn't matter really what ends up. It's just, has the process been maintained? Yeah. Because over the years, churches they've had problems, and rather than dealing with their problems in biblical, redemptive, restorative church discipline, they just added a bylaw, right?
Yeah.
There isn't any problem in your church or my church that couldn't be solved with biblical, restorative church discipline. We just don't have we don't have the commitment or the backing of the church to do it. They don't understand why we do it. So they said, well, you know what? So that doesn't happen again, let's just add something to the rules or the bylaws. Listen, you know you're in trouble when someone pulls out the bylaws in a business meeting, right? And nothing good is going to happen after that.
No.
And frankly, if some of our members knew the New Testament as well as they know the bylaws, in other words, you can be a pastor sometimes and really deviate from the New Testament, they'll not fire you. You deviate from bylaws, they'll kick you out the next Sunday. Yeah. I mean, I don't mean you should deviate from the New Testament. I didn't say that. But I'm trying to make a point by being absurd. But they will get upset with you if you deviate from the bylaws.
If you mess with the bylaws,
because that's where they put their trust in because that's their sense of control.
Control, right.
Right?
Yes.
And so what happens is, in those cases where they value the process of decision, this is the bad part. Let me interpret that for you. The most carnal, unprayed up person in your church can derail anything. Mm-hmm. He can say anything or she can say anything in a business meeting that can just completely deflate whatever has been going on. You may have the whole church in favor of something. But this one person, maybe they're not even regenerate, but they're a church member. In a business meeting, they can stand up and just tell you all the reasons why it shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And the rest of the members may disagree with them. But, you know, people are tired of fighting. They're tired of conflict in the church, in their home, in their school, in their politics. So sometimes they would say, you know, rather than fight this guy for the next 2 years over this, let's just don't do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean, that the process of decision sometimes hinders the outcome of decision.
Yeah.
And in dying churches, we talked about it, about how sometimes they feel like we want to reach the community, right? And so if we talk about it enough and we take it through a process enough, we've done it. But no, you haven't. It just got bogged down in your process.
That's right.
And I got a great story about that. Are you ready to listen to the story?
Yeah, come on, bring it.
All right, Mark. I should let you talk more.
No, listen, I love
it. It's your couch I'm sitting on.
Come on, come on.
All right, well, anyway. So the director of missions and I are in the basement of this church. Why do all major decisions seem to happen in church basements? We were in the basement of this church. There were five members there. The tote board upstairs for Sunday school said eight. And that was legit. I asked him. I said, was that your attendance last Sunday? Eight.
And it was.
Now, seven of those brought their Bible. But only six studied their lesson. It was on the tote board. But nonetheless, but all eight stayed for worship.
Did they all tithe?
But they all tithe, yeah. Okay. Anyway, there were eight, all right? That's okay. You know, and so they needed a pastor. So the director of mission and I were down in the basement, and we met with the five on the pastor search committee. First thing the director of mission said was, and his name's Rodney, and he'll verify this. He was there. He said, do you want, obviously, a part-time pastor? And they said, no, we could have full-time. We have enough money in the bank to pay a full-time pastor for 2 years, or a part-time pastor for 4 years. Well, what do you do if the full-time pastor doesn't work out in 2 years? Well, he'll have to, or he won't get paid anymore, is what they said. And so Rodney said, well, until you know full-time or part-time, we really can't help you. Let's talk now why you want a full-time and why you want a part-time. To which the chairman of the search committee said, well, we can't make that decision. That's the finance committee's decision.
Mm.
I'm talking to five people.
There were only
eight there on Sunday.
Right.
So I asked the million-dollar question. I said, well, who's on the finance committee? I'm not making this up. All five of them raised their hands.
No way.
Way.
Oh, man.
And so the director of missions wasn't going to ask. So I asked the question. I said, well, let's just become the finance committee and let's talk about that. And she said, in all seriousness, we can't have a meeting of the finance committee unless we give 2 weeks notice to the church.
Are
it's a
serious?
Public meeting. I'm serious.
Oh, man.
Now, that is absurd, but it actually happened. And it's a case where the process of decision was more important than the outcome of decision.
Wow. Yeah.
That describes what I'm talking about. Yeah. And some of you listening to me, you know that describes your church. You can't get anything done because the process hinders it. And the process is basically based on the fact that we don't trust each other.
Yeah.
And that's a huge issue in a church.
And isn't that sad? Because the process can be good as long as the end goal is clear, and that is to carry out the mission that Jesus has given us.
Not to make sure the most carnal Christian in your church
gets
or maybe
way.
Even the most unregenerate church member gets to derail it. I remember Henry Blackaby said one time, the last thing this church needs is your unprayed over opinion.
Ooh.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing that we do along the same line is that church members make decisions without being filled with the Holy Spirit.
Oh, yes.
How do we do that?
Yeah.
You know, how
and
is that possible?
We get the wrong answer because we ask the wrong question. Again, Blackaby says, you should never ask, are you for this or not for this? Should we do this or should we not do this? Has no bearing on it whatsoever. You say, how have you prayed about it? And what has Jesus told you he wants you to do with his church?
Wow.
That's
wow.
the only question we ask.
Which brings us to the fourth point of these four symptoms that we're talking about today on declining church. And that is just the subject of idolatry.
Yeah.
Idolatry. And even in the modern church.
Yeah. The reason churches find it so difficult to make changes is that Satan has created, he's done a terrific transaction. You know, Mark, Satan is always at work like a roaring lion.
You go
to sleep tonight, you wake up, he's still working the next day,
yes,
right?
Yep.
And he's working on your church all the time.
Right, that's right.
And he's scheming and he's strategizing to rob God of his glory. He wants to rob God of his glory. He wanted to rob God of his glory in heaven. He wants to rob God of his glory in creation. He wants to rob God of his glory in your church.
Yeah.
And so the way he's done it, he knows he's not going to probably get 88-year-old widows to start taking cocaine and going, you know, to the
probably
casinos
be his best strategy.
And wasting all their money. But he can get those 88-year-old widows to make their love and their affection no longer Christ, but the church as they've experienced it.
Wow.
And they begin to, you know, among other things, an idol is something you run to for comfort, for meaning, and for security. And you know something's a false idol if you're afraid of losing it. So what Satan has done, in a world that's changing constantly, you think about if you're 80 years old, how you make a phone call has changed. The cars you drive has changed. How you watch television has changed. I mean, first it was cable, and then it was satellite, and now it's smart TV. You know, my in-laws can't watch the shows they want to watch because, frankly, they don't have a smart TV and they don't understand all the apps. And you know, I hardly understand it. I don't know how many apps we have on our TV. Every time we want to watch something, we got to go to a different app, And so, you know, all those things are different. And you don't even recognize the culture anymore.
Mm.
But there's one place an 80-year-old person could go every week, and for a couple of hours, everything is just like they remembered it. And that becomes very special to them. And Satan knows that that has become their idol. And you come in as a pastor and say, we're going to change this, and they just totally freak out. The problem with that is you know it's a false idol if they're afraid of losing it.
Mm.
And so what you and I have to do as pastors is help them find their true love in affection
in
Jesus.
That's right.
Because they'll never lose him.
Amen. That's right.
You know, the writer of Ecclesiastes says, remember the Lord in the days of your youth before the evil days come. And he describes the evil days. You wake at the sound of a bird, the wise men grow weak, the windows grow dim, the grinders cease. He's talking about getting old, right? And yet, if you look at the Apostle Paul, he says, I've learned to be content in whatever state I'm in, whether I'm free or in prison, have little, have... What's the difference between the writer of Ecclesiastes and the Apostle Paul? The writer of Ecclesiastes is really a picture of what life would be without Christ. Paul is a picture of what life is with Christ. And you want your elderly people in your church to see the life that Paul had and be content no matter what happens in that church as long as it's what Jesus wants.
That's
a long soliloquy,
but I'm
just telling you, you have to help... And people will not lay down an idol easily. You know how they lay down an idol, Mark? By giving them something better to idolize.
Wow, yes.
And showing them the true gospel and showing them the true love of Jesus and lifting
that's
up
right.
Christ. Not by guilting them to it or shaming them to
right.
it, but by when you exchange for them that idol of the church as they know it, as they've experienced it, for the risen Christ.
Yes.
And you see their hearts begin to change toward that.
Yes.
You've done your job as a
pastor. Well, and I'll tell you what, there's several implications of this. One is this, that I'm convicted by. Is my joy in Jesus above every other joy in my life?
Yeah.
And because you can't fake that. You can fake it for a while, but that comes through in your preaching. Are people hearing my pastor is madly in love with Christ?
Wow.
That Christ is his greatest treasure of all treasures. You can't lead, you can't give what you don't have, man.
Right.
That's just the truth. And so, you know, another thing I think about often is you teach what you know, you reproduce who you are. If I'm not a man who believes everything you just said as a pastor, how would I expect the flock that I'm shepherding to lay down their idols at the feet of Jesus because Jesus is better if I'm not laying down my idols before Jesus, who and, is my greatest treasure?
And as a pastor, sometimes our idol is a larger congregation, a more beautiful building, a more updated building, all of those things.
Is Jesus more than enough?
Exactly.
Do you really believe it? And do your people? Would your people look at you and say, "My pastor believes that"?
That's right.
That's good the bottom line.
Awesome.
Been a good discussion today, and we've talked about these symptoms of a declining church. We'll be talking about several more in other episodes to come. Please subscribe to our podcast. You can do that right there on that button on your screen. And join us. We'll be doing this again. You'll be hearing within a few days another podcast.
By the way, Daniel, I have something here. If whether you subscribe or not, but I hope you'll subscribe. If you will go to this website, it's called replanthats.com. Are you ready? Replanthats.com.
This is a real website.
It's a real website. Replanthats.com. And you fill out the little form. We will send you a North American Mission Board International Harvester replant hat.
That's awesome.
Because Jesus is the true International Harvester.
Come on.
All right? And we've given many of these away. And just to our listeners, because we love you so much, go to replanthats.com. But please subscribe when you do that.
Absolutely.
And we would love to send you your own International Harvester replant
hat. By the way, you're wearing right now.
I'm wearing it. I sleep in it.
That's a beautiful
hat. I shower
hat.
In it.
I believe it.
You can tell.
I believe it. There's some rings around that baby.
Hey, I hate to anesthetize the pain of the end of this podcast, but it's over with. We'll see you in our next one. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.